This tutorial will mainly will just be on Haskell, just with the language barrier, since I'm sure most of you have seen Haskell. And it's because Hyper use Haskell, and I hope that by the end of this tutorial or a couple of hours after that, we can get used to the syntax. And then we'll have a relatively smoother transition to Hyperion in these days. And it's not working. Okay. So, just some history background. Haskell is a functional programming language. And.
Sorry, you should put this on.
Oh, I should put this on. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Here we go. Okay, so Haskell is a functional programming language. It's I don't know how many of you have interactions with functional language, functional programming language, but I believe you have more experience with object-oriented programming, such as C++ or Python, and the functional programming is completely different categories of programming language. And its logic is more based on mathematical functions rather than objects that encapsulate data. We'll see some examples like how they compare it. But it does change the way we think in programming a lot. And some keywords in Haskell is called a lazy and pure and has Haskell is a lazy, pure functional programming language and has a strong type system. And people say it's known for its easiness to write and debug. I will let you to decide whether it's true or not. Okay, and let's just go through the keywords first. So lazy, pure, and functional programming strong type system. So lazy first. The lazy means that a value is not evaluated until it's actually needed. So on the left hand side, this is how you write functions in C++, I think. So C++ will evaluate each statement line by line. And even say you return something totally irrelevant to your X or Y, it'll still execute every single line. Well, in Haskell, it's not the case. In Haskell, for example, here, it just encode x as an expression of 1 + 2, and it does not compute what x is until it calls y, because y is x. And a more explicit example is here. So I first define a function fxy. It takes x and return either x or y, depends on the sign of x. And then I call this f functions by providing x equals to 1 and y equals to some non-number. So this is ill-defined, 1 or 0. This can, C++ will definitely hate it, Python will hate it. But Haskell, it's fine in Haskell. The reason is because x is 1 and y is 1, this non-number. And when x is bigger than 0, it just return x. So it never goes to y. So this y, this 1 over 0, never gets evaluated. So Haskell will not complain with this line. And yeah, so this is called laziness. It only evaluates things when it's needed. So it can save some resources or energies to compute things that you actually use at the
end. What was the difference between the two examples? Because in the first one, you said y equals x times 3, and then g equals f times 1 times that. So this will, that line will evaluate x or not?
This line will evaluate x. Yes, this one gives you y. And because y need x, so you evaluate x. If for example, if I just see y equals to 3 in y, then x will not get evaluated. Okay.
Yeah. Can I say something else? The fxy is not f times x times y. That's the application of the function f to the arguments x and y.
Okay.
Yeah, I was asking about the difference between the g equals and the y equals. So that means that when you say g equals f 1, 1, 0, does it get evaluated or not, the g?
This one does. Like when you, I was more say it's evaluated when you call g. Like you put this and then you evaluate g.
You have like in g?
So this, let's see. You can write in G, or you can just to go to the next line and touch G in the command and return. Yeah.
So if you never called G in GHCI, then none of this gets done.
None of this.
In the line FXY, X and Y are like patterns. They're not the X and Y above, right?
No. Okay. And the second keyword is called pure. And pure is defined by another concept called side effect. Side effect is something that affects the state of the world. Like you print a hello world, that changes the state of this world. And a pure computation means something that doesn't create side effects. And so Haskell used a system called monads to isolate all impure computation. Impure computation, if we can change the state of the world, sometimes it's not secure, and you can get lose track of how you modify variables. And so Haskell tried to avoid that, but we still need input out of the way we want to execute programs and do things for us. So that's what there's one answer for it. If you want to change the state of the world in a safe way, we'll see how the concrete examples much later on. But here is a simpler example of, so this is what we do very often in Python or C++. You can just assign, you update x by using this statement. Yeah, and in general, this kind of assignment is not allowed in Haskell. Every time Haskell do this, it creates a new value. So if we see called this function, this is a function definition, and you assign say x equals to 2, and you apply add 1 to x, and it print out it assign a new value to y. And then you print out x, it's still the same value. It's still 2 and y becomes 3. There's a change in language, it's a detailed change in language in GHC 2021. In old GHC, if you type this in, just use this statement, it will raise a error message, compiling error. But now it doesn't, but it doesn't mean that it works the same way. So if you do this and then you call x, it never ends because it tries to go on and on forever. Yeah.
If it's a fixed point, does it stop at the fixed point?
Good question.
What combinators are a thing?
I don't know. That's a good question. I won't try that.
I guess it never exit.
Yeah, I think it just never
returns your results.
By default, it will not know that there is such a thing as a fixed point. Keep going.
Yeah, you need a stopping criteria for it.
But you should put the microphone on your...
Do I have to?
Yes.
I don't want to screw my shirt.
You should put this in your pocket.
Okay. Oh yeah, I'm using it as a pointer. Thank you. This is a mic, okay.
No, you should put it on your cover. Otherwise, it's not
okay.
Correctly recording.
Okay, thanks. Right, so next one, and this is not working, okay. Next one, okay, the main point, functional. So functional just means like we program with the concept of composing functions in mathematics. So again, the C++ examples and the Haskell examples. So C++, we think of things line by line, so step by step, like x and y, and we call some other helper functions with x and y and go on. But in Haskell, we first, for example, for this example, say we first define some function and x, we'll go through the syntax in a few minutes. So, but this means take an integer and square it, and return the result. And now I can reuse this function like this. So map is a function that takes a function from A to B, map it on a list of A. So this is list. And returns another list that corresponds to the type that the original function square, original function provided here returns. So if I put square after map, the map square will correspond to this bit from list of A to list of B. And in this case, A is integers, B is integer. So map squares, it becomes a function from list in list, integer list to integer list. And then we can apply this whole thing on some list of integers. And then it just square the each element of this list. And the way we write in C++, or of course, like you need to write a for loop, a while loop, like execute what you will do for each element. While in Haskell, this is how we do it. We do things by composing things we've written before.
Sorry, so this map is a built-in symbol in Haskell, or?
This map is a standard function. But you can write it our own. You can write your own version of map, like my map equals something something.
Could you repeat just this map this line? Or what does this A?
Can you maybe in one or two slides I'll explain basic syntax. Yeah, I just want to show you like just the first taste of what those words mean. Okay, and the last keyword is type system. So a type system or a strong type system here is, so you've seen those things. Those things put type constraints on what this square function can act on. And for example, if you put square 1.5, it will not do it. It only works for int to int. It only works for int. The argument can only be int. And this line, it works. So later on, we'll see why it works. But the third line does not. So okay, the second line is it induces that it kind of casting 10 to be an integer. While if you specify that could we want 10 to be double, and then this does not do it. But in general, Python and C++, I think they convert some types for you. But Haskell absolutely don't do this.
So the first line, it casts 5 to an int first?
No, this I declare 5 as an int.
Yeah.
It casts 10 to int,
okay,
because I'm adding these two numbers.
Yeah. But what if I do 5 int plus 10.5?
And no.
Literals are implicitly typed sometimes. That doesn't serve us right.
Okay, and the compilers is called the Glasgow Haskell compiler. Oh, well, there are more compilers, but the one we use is GHC. And so stack is what I forced you to install. It's a toolbox, and it just helps to develop a Haskell project. Come down to it. That's David who forced everybody to install it. And the two commands you'll be using mainly are the stack build and stack install. Yeah, those two things are just when you start a project. And yeah, but you can also use stack to compile single files. It works very similar to GCC compiler. And the interpreter is called GHCI. So if you just type this in your command line, then you start the interpreter and you can experiment with Haskell. Okay, and there are many tutorials online. Those three are what I have been using. The first one is a rather comprehensive and standard introduction tutorials with nice examples and pictures. The second one, it's a PDF files. I would say it's a quick start, especially if you have experience with C++ and Python. And at the beginning, it could be confusing of how they distinguish from each other. So I would recommend that if that's what you find at the beginning. And the third one has some very nice pictures, and I'll be using those pictures at the end of the later stage of this.
So can you also just do GHC without doing stack GHC?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it just stack could do it for it does a lot of things for you.
You mean it includes a lot of the packages that you would need to install with GHC, or?
It does install the everything standard, I think.
With stack?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you use stack, it takes care of installing everything for you. You don't need your own copy of GHC. It's equivalent to if you use conda in Python, you don't need to download all the different kinds of Python you need necessarily. It does it for you. So stack is like conda for Haskell.
Good, thanks. Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to the basic syntax, conditional expressions, data structure. Those are reminiscent of what we usually encounter in programming language. Okay. Okay, so first, this usual thing, we declare a variable, and there's still the basic arithmetic operations like plus, multiplications, equalities, inequalities, and the functional declarations are the first line is called the type constraint, so you write down your sometimes you don't have to write this, but it's a good practice, like you know what is being mapped to what. Everything before the last ones will correspond to the type of your argument, and the last one is the type of your the values you return. Yeah, and so these functions will take two arguments of type int, of integers, and just to take the sum and return you another integer. And
if you have more than two inputs, you just put
more
an int and then the result.
Yeah. And right, and you don't need the parentheses around the function. And the namings are case sensitive. So in Haskell, those variables and the functions are all known as values. So they obey the same rules, the same naming rules. And those values will start with lowercase, like lowercase. And the uppercase is are reserved for the types, like integers and doubles and everything. Okay.
So in the int arrow, I should imagine the parentheses being on the second and third int first, like it takes an integer and spits out a function.
So what it does is actually, if I just provide one variable, the add int a will be, it just shadow this one, and it becomes int to int. And that's expecting a b here. So what Haskell does is really functional composition. It doesn't involve a parenthesis. Okay, and right, that's it. And if you want to comment in lines, it's by dash dash for single like comment. And if you want to comment a whole block, you use curly brackets with dash. Okay, and the conditional expressions, if and else is kind of very similar, but except it involves a then statement following the if. So usually, see in C++ or Python, you just have an if and do whatever you want, and then else with the same indentation with if. But it's a slightly different syntax, is slightly different here. And another thing called cases. So cases, so if, sorry. Okay, let me do this first. Cases is called, it use something called pattern matching. So it just matching of case X of, like a when X is zero, it maps to what, the one maps to what. And this is called a wildcard, which is just a placeholder that can map everything else. So cases, when you have several things, say, and you find the nested if and else arguments very, like, get too redundant or complicated, then cases is a good way to do it. And things to be careful is first, the case will map the first line first and then go down. So just be careful, like, if you can't match the first case, then it will ignore everything below it. Okay. And next to the let and let in state syntax and the where, those are that used to, like, when you want to declare some local variables you want to use. And so let in is just let some variables, you define it, and in, say, x2 plus 1. It's just plugging x squares in x2. And so let will define declare your local variables or define your local variables before the evaluation. But where will do it later. So here, another square x, x2 plus 1, and where x2 equals to x squared. Yeah, usage-wise, they are very, very similar. Yeah, I would say they're very, very similar. Until you get experience, I don't recommend you look into how different they are. Yeah.
I imagine where only applies to the last line, though.
So no, where actually cover the whole scope of the scope of a whole function.
Oh.
You can, yeah, you can write many, many lines before then and finally say where. And you can also have, like, multiple statements after where. You can have multiple statements after let too. And finally, it's we have guards. Guards is kind of similar to cases, except guards allow us to do some more flexible judgment or what. So cases only maps, like, it maps your data content, while guards allow you to do something, some operations with your argument. And for this one, it's just you can compare, and if it's less than that, what, greater than that, and others. And with guards, it has to be exclusive. So you have to have an either you exclude, you iterate all possibility, or you have an otherwise statement at the end. But cases, actually, you don't have to be exclusive. You get warnings, but you don't get errors.
So in and where can only be one line in the in statement itself?
Yeah, I think so, right? Someone
Sorry.
Is not paying attention. In only gets one expression after that.
Yeah,
I think so.
Don't
but,
in very much.
But you can have the more complicated data structures. Like you can have a pair, and
mm-hmm.
but it's a one object. But you can have several.
It's like the return line. It will assign that final value to that function, or kind of not exactly.
No, I don't think so.
No, that's not. No.
Yeah, it's a statement. It's,
but if I evaluate the square plus one function on 5, it will return.
Yeah, this one will.
2 plus 1.
Yeah, this one
That's
will.
What I mean.
Yeah.
But the in being that is distinct from. It's just that the x plus 2 is on the last line, which makes it so square plus 1 returns that. The in is like an auxiliary thing, it's a separate thing. That's just telling the code where the let statement is relevant. You could write exactly this code without the in, and it would still work exactly correctly. So.
Without the in?
Yeah. Or you might have to return, you might have to put.
Yeah, you have to, because there has to be some context.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you don't use in when you do notation and in list. I don't think there are other cases you don't use it.
And could you have things like where x2 equals x star x and also have some where x3 equals?
Yeah, you just start another line and they have to keep the same indentation and x2. Yeah. So those things I put in the file called conditional expression. Where are you? Okay, and they're all there. You can experiment. You can change this file, and then you load conditional expression here, and then you can see. Plus 1, 5. It gets a warning, but it gets 26 as well. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention. In your command line, you just type stack GHCIs in. But under the example files, because that's where I initiate the stack.
Okay. So you need the in if you're not in do notation, but if you're in do notation, you don't.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, that's the difference. There we go.
Okay.
So go back to the previous. All of these are different ways of defining functions.
Those are syntax you can use.
But earlier we were doing the double colon thing. That's also a way of defining function.
Sorry, which one?
Can you go to the next?
Double colon.
The double colon.
Yeah, so that's a type declaration. And
okay.
Then
you don't need that all the time?
You don't need it all the time, but it's good practice.
Okay.
You actually need it never.
Because the Haskell type system is going to be challenging.
Okay.
You want to check the type all the time.
Yes.
If you don't, and the compiler catches it, you don't understand it. You never understand it anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, so next data structures. And the first most common ones is the list. And in Haskell, a list can hold an arbitrary number of elements of the same type. It doesn't have to be a finite list. And from now on, we'll be checking types all the time and just get used to it. And if you type column T and put whatever values you want to check the type with, you just do this. And as you can see, it returns the type of the list, including 1 and 2. And here, A is some still abstract abstract type variables. We'll understand what this means later on, but basically it's a number. It doesn't have to be an integer. It's just a general number. And what did I write here? Okay, so the way in Haskell you can append another element to a list by using the single column. And you append it at the front, like 0 and the column, the list, and you get 0, 1, 2. And here, if I specify int, then I can specify the type of this list as this. And then this values will be a list of ints. And so in Haskell, every list is it's created by doing this prepend recursively. At first it's done on an empty list and just to keep prepend the elements to the list. Okay. And this plus plus is a list concatenation. And just to take two lists and join them together. And there are a few standard functions on list. The first one is called hit. It just gives you the first element. And the second one called tail. Tail just it gives you every the list after the first element, and take two, like take a number and the list will give you the first how many numbers you put here, the first the list of the first how many elements. Okay, so those three. And so I want to stress here is that list can hold arbitrary number, means in Haskell we can define an infinitely long list. And in your GHCI, you can type in this, integers equals one dot dot. So this expression will create an infinitely long integer list. It's fine in Haskell before because nothing is evaluated at this stage. If you, after this definition, and you type integers, then it'll print out indefinitely. So I do not recommend to do that. Of course, you can try. I tried. And yeah, so it's just, if we follow these definitions, then you just, it's just defined by prepend indefinitely long many times. And the head will still give you the first element, which is one, but the tail, again, don't do this on integers because tail is infinitely long. So we don't, that's why we in standard functions, we don't have the last element. We just have the first element because it's list can be infinitely long. So tail will give you the rest of everything. So if you do tail integers, it's still an infinitely long list.
How did it know to complete the 1 into 2, 3, 4, 5?
It's this syntax. And kind of,
okay.
You can, there's in, if we want to do, see, if you want to increment yourself, you can do this. Can you see it here?
Yeah, 1, 3, dot. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not, why is, I don't, okay. Yeah, here we go. 1, 3 dot until 9, then you print you can define your own inductive
so
step.
To see what pattern you're giving and fills it out.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't do fancy patterns, by the way.
Can it guess prime numbers?
No, I got the same question last week. Okay.
It only ever does linear.
Yeah.
Steps.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay. Another data structure is the tuples. And so tuples hold a fixed number of elements, but it's okay to put different types in for each element. Right. For example, we can check the type of 1, 2, and it just requires that they are some numbers. They don't even require what kind of numbers they are, so they can be different. For example, it can be integers and doubles. And it could be, for example, an integer or a number. Sorry, it's a number. I didn't cast it to integer. And then followed by a character type. And the standard functions are the first and second. It only works on pair, it doesn't work on say triples or anything. Yes.
Can you comment on what the A and B are in num A and num B?
I'm going to discuss it later.
Great.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between square bracket and this bracket here?
Square is a list. And here the bracket is a tuples.
Oh.
Okay.
FSD and SND are already defined.
Yeah, the standard functions.
How many of them are defined?
Just those two.
Just two.
You can't do third and hope that you get something.
Oh, you mean yeah? They this only only work on pairs. They don't even work on triples.
Okay.
You don't call first on triples.
Oh, you can't even call first on.
Yeah, for example. Ah, look, there's so many warnings. So first, and first is one. You can see it, right?
Yeah.
And, but if, let's see, first, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Nope.
It yeah. But I guess take works.
Sorry?
Take works.
No, take only defined for list.
Okay.
in the head. But how would I get the second element for the triple?
Pattern matching.
Or you can define your own function. Okay. So next is some syntax on function composition. So the just dot is or period is the function composition that you can compose a function f with another function g, and the dollars is called a function application. Like it works more like this way, and So for this example, you can write it in different ways. Like all three will work the same way. The first one just compose fg together first, and second one is act g on x, and then act f on the result. And the final thing is with the dollar signs, it will first evaluate gx and then apply f to the whole result. Okay. And you can try those things in. I have a few examples in basic syntax. I have the f1 and g1 here, and you can try those notations out. How they act. Those we can skip. Okay, and so those are kind of similar to old stuff. And the next two bullet points here, I'm going to cover something more specific to Haskell. And the first is the type and type classes. Okay, so Haskell type system, a few keywords here. The first called statistic types is that all variables must have a specific type determined at the compile time. So those are just examples of first line is like I specify that I want this two to be an integer. And so when I call column type, when I check the time of this thing, it's an integer here. And if it's, then it can deduce some types, some general types for it. And this is what Haskell can sometimes do it for you, depending on the usage or your usage of this value. For example, this way we've seen earlier. So Haskell take your 5 as an integer and tries to call this function plus or add or sum. I don't know how to call it. And it wants the same type of argument for add. So that's it. It casts your 10, which is supposed to be a general type, to an integer type. And so this Haskell is fine, relatively fine, can do it for you. And this line instead, then it does not. This is what we call the strongly typed. Because once the type of a value is determined, then the language will not implicitly convert the type for you. So 5 as integers and 10 as double will not work. It will give you an error saying your type doesn't match. OK, and there's one more thing called the polymorph. Did I type it wrong? Polymorphic, PNH. You have we have similar concepts in other languages. It basically means that your functions and values can be defined with type variables. So those A's are what we call type variables. And the map function we saw earlier, those A and B's are also type variables. Here they are just a placeholder saying A is some type, abstract type. It doesn't have any property right now, any constraint right now. And because we can have different types for this functions, and so we use different type variables. And if it only acts, so if it's another function or your own defined functions, they only want to take function from A to A. They only map the same type to same type. then it will be AA map to list of A's and finally return list of A. Okay, so those are called type variables. Does this answer you satisfied? Good. And Ning?
Is this similar to the template in C++?
I would say at first I interpreted them in the same way. It allows some degrees of freedom of what your function can act on.
So could you explain again what is number A to?
That I will still have to delay to you to 3 slides later. Okay. Any other question?
So type variable means it's like a variable with some type, or sorry, what does the word type variable mean?
Type variable means you can set A to integer, kind of. For example, our example earlier, where I plug in, where I act map on square, and my square is defined with from integer to integer. That's setting A to integers and B to integers, and that's how it's worked.
But A is, so int is a type, and A is the type variable.
So one way to think about it is just as when you define a function, you have an argument x, so like you apply f to x. When you run that function later, you're specifying what x is. In the same way, Haskell takes a type argument as well, or in fact, several type arguments generically. And those are the type variables, A. It's implicitly taken. You're not literally stating it, but it's implicit.
But isn't it the same as the patterns in Mathematica, basically, with the underscore after the variable?
Similar. Similar.
Not a Mathematica experts. Okay. So now let's see some more spatial types in Haskell. This type is called the maybe. It's a very commonly used data type in Haskell. And what maybe does, when we want to declare a new type, the keywords we use is data. It's called data. You start data, you start to define your a new type. And this maybe here is the name of this data type. And this maybe will take a time, type variable A. And on the other side of the equality is are the constructors. They are called the constructors of your type. And maybe you have two constructors. One is nothing. The other is just. And just takes this type variables again. For example, if I put A to see, I declare maybe int, then this constructors will be nothing and just int. Okay, so maybe it's useful when it gives us freedom to have values to have optional values or null values. And you can, what I mean is, with this example, so I want a function that takes the first element of a list. But the list can be an empty list. So the first element acting on empty list shouldn't return me anything. And that's what this nothing does. While first element with a non-empty list, it's a pattern matching. This one means the first element and it's prepended in front of the rest of the list. And then the first element it's a valid function acting it's a valid operation to do on a non-empty list and just return your first argument. So it wrapped this first argument with this constructor just. And so this offers a safe way when you evaluating things.
So this maybe is something you defined, or it's already there in Haskell?
This is already there. It's a very commonly used in the standard data structure.
That's a bracket. Sorry, the bracket with x.xs, is it a list then, or doesn't have anything to do with tuples?
this is a list. And this is, if you remember, we can prepend elements to a list using the column. And so this means this list, I write it as X prepended to something else. And this something else is the rest of your list. So this is called pattern matching.
Yeah. What's the use of just?
Just is just wrapping around, wrapping this element.
And what's the, if I remove just from this slide?
So, for example, if A is int, if you remove this just, like this, okay, first of all, just is, it's called a constructor. So when you have a data type, on the other side, you have constructors. So those are kind of like structures you can have in your data type. Yeah, and so you have to have those keywords. Yeah, so, some keywords can take arguments, some don't, it's fine. Yeah.
But the first element is something you are trying to define.
The first element, yeah, here I'm using maybe as an example of why it's, under what circumstances can be useful. Yeah.
Yeah, could, couple random comments. On the topic of tuples, tuples come from commas, not parentheses.
Okay.
So it's like Python. Python is the same thing. So just because you have parentheses does not mean you have a tuple. If you have a comma, you have a tuple. First thing. Second comment is the reason why you can't have first element x colon xs equals x is because x is not a maybe. X does not have type maybe. We've defined the function first element to return a maybe. And this is a way of, as like I said, like dealing with the fact that sometimes you can't return just like a number. You'll have to say, oops, I couldn't do it.
But if it were my maybe, and in the second line of my maybe I have just A, that doesn't work.
Sorry?
But if I type my maybe,
yeah,
and in the second line, instead of just A, I put A from just.
Yeah, so you can put my just here.
No.
Like it's another constructor following your argument.
Yeah.
It could. Yeah.
You need the constructor just. If you don't have the constructor just, it does not know what you're doing. You need to specify, I'm putting something inside of my maybe. And
does it matter that it's called just, or can you put any other word there?
Yeah. If you define your own type, you define your own constructors. They're just names.
Is just already built in Pascal?
Yes.
Yeah.
So
maybe is. Okay. Okay, so
Wait, are we not defining maybe?
So
the defined function, this is what the definition looks like in the source code.
Oh, I see. We don't have to write that into our code.
No.
So
this is standard.
Yes, you can define my maybe and then have my just.
Yeah.
That will work.
I see it.
Yeah.
So what if I do first element on say a list 1, 2, 3?
1, 2,
and then
3.
Do colon t of that. It will say maybe int.
And do column t. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I see what you mean.
Yes.
You mean?
Hopefully, it'll say just. Just.
It will say just or maybe.
I don't think.
No, it'll say maybe. So the type is maybe.
It will just one. So like, if you call this on 1, 2, 3.
And then I call the type of that.
The type of that?
Will it be int or maybe int or just int?
It'll be maybe. Okay.
It'll be maybe.
Okay.
It'll be maybe.
Yeah, the maybe is the name of the type, and just is one way of creating a maybe. Nothing is another way of making a maybe.
Yeah. So nothing and just are sub data structures and maybe.
So just is more like a function. Maybe is your type. Maybe A is your type, sorry.
So this just basically works like as a head in mathematics.
Oh gosh.
Like a head. I think I understand the nothing part. That's like, let's say you're trying to divide something by zero, maybe.
Exactly.
But what is the just? Like, if it's not nothing, then you can just say A, right? Why do you need
no? So if you only say A, your type is A, not maybe A. So the type has to map the same thing.
Oh, because if you returned A, the nothing is not included in that set.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why you just put a dummy thing there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that the just and nothing are together in one set, and
yep.
that's like the target of your output.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Those two lines are casework. It's casework. Okay. First, you look at if you get an empty list, you return nothing. Otherwise, you return the first element.
Okay. So this might be, so those are like the user defined types. Like they are not maybe standard not defined in the standard libraries anymore. So you can just try those things, like define your own types, and this is how I do it. So for example, here I just defined a new data type called color, and this is a type, and it's the name of your data type. And the constructors here is red, orange, and then custom. Like you can define your own types by specifying three numbers corresponding to the RGB numbers. And yeah, these examples are in this file color. Okay. Any questions on the first example? That's the same. That's the same syntax as maybe. Yeah. So.
What's the analog of the A thing in this case?
Int. Oh. Kind of, but A is a type variable. So A can be anything,
yes.
But here I specifically said that I will take int as argument. So I don't have A on this side anymore.
But
yeah.
Can I ask a question in the previous slide still?
Yeah.
Yeah so
this one, right?
Yeah, so suppose I do, suppose the first element of the list is an int.
The first element
of the list x, append x is an int.
It's a list?
The int.
Okay.
Then can I add the output of this function first element to another int?
Okay, add the first element to another int. Oh, no. So you will be adding just x to C2. They don't add. It's the same thing, you don't add integers to doubles. They're of different types. But add has to take the same type.
But can you convert the just two to a?
Yes, yes, we'll see it later on.
Okay.
And that's actually the whole point of doing this.
Yeah.
Sorry, I still didn't understand. Why is int not on the left-hand side in the matrix?
So because it's like here, you don't have a type variable anymore. Your type is a constant. Like maybe can take a type, an int, as an argument. Like you set your type variable A to int. It's the same as you set x to 5. But here I've set those are fixed. They are constant types. So you don't have arguments anymore.
This either might confuse you further or make things much more clear, but types themselves have types, and they're called kinds.
It's going to confuse them.
But just maybe is not a type, but
yeah.
Maybe A is a type.
Oh.
There's an infinite number of types for different types of A, so you can have maybe A, okay. Color is just a single type already.
So the color could be either red, orange, or three integers.
So red, orange.
So color could be either red, orange, or three integers.
Yeah. So it's like in the function you put your type here as a type constraint.
Yeah.
And the results are your constructors. They're coming from your constructors.
So okay.
Yeah.
So what is red?
What is red? Red is a color. Red is a color. So
we can return red from a function.
Yeah. Yep.
With capital R.
Yep.
Yeah.
And same with you can return true or false if you have a boolean or something.
Yeah.
And and the other way you can declare a data type. Sometimes it's called record. And So record has same here data and your data type name, and then the constructor have fields. They are called fields. A field you can specify those arguments with fields. So it's kind of similar to the last line here, except we have names for those arguments. And so, for example, this is R number, G number, B number, and each of them will take an integer, will be assigned to an integer. And furthermore, those things become functions. Like if you have some objects called any color, and you put R numbers in front of it, and then it returns that integers corresponding to the R number. Okay. So they're in colors.
Object.
Yeah. So this is an example of you, Jay just asked. So here you can define a functions matching each of your constructor. And you can call f color. You can define f color when it takes red as an argument, and it returns here. I wanted to return the RGB number and just return the triple of null integers. And then you can define it for orange and define it for the customer defined color, which just returns whatever those are. And
why do you return it as a tuple instead of a list? Is that just your choice?
Yeah, that's just my choice. Yeah, that's how I defined it.
So some colors is the same as colors?
Right, yeah, sorry, I defined the names are a little bit different from the slides.
Where did you define some color?
Some color is the same as the slides. It's the colors in the slides.
Okay.
And here is when you define fields. So it's a common practice that you put the same name here and here in your constructor. I just tried that this works. So.
That's called punning.
What? Punning?
Punning, yes.
Okay. It's a cute one. Do I have anything more? Yeah, so I can, let's try one thing maybe. Custom color, see, 1, 2, 3. It's going to do, no, it's not going to do. Okay, I can call my color directly. My color. Why didn't print out any? Sorry. Ah, here we go. So my color is I already defined it with three integers fitting into each of the fields. I think this should work. This works too. Right, and for example, I can call my number on my color, and just gives me the first elements. This field, as I said, those fields they are functions. When you declare a data type like this, those fields become functions. And you can extract those properties.
We need to specify when defining my color, our number, G number, I don't know, what's the other one? G number, or can I just type bracket 0, 0, 0?
Yeah, you don't need commas. Like you can just do this. You just fit in here. So custom colors are here.
All right, okay, good. Yeah, that's all.
Okay, and so those are how we define our types, and there are two more keywords. One is type, which stands for type synonyms, And this just kind of creating an alias. If you have some existing type, you want to name it differently so it's more descriptive. And this is easy. And the another thing called new type. And new type is, it's a more or less just a data type, but it only has one constructor. So not three, for example, it only has one. And this constructor can only take one argument. So you can't take int anymore, just take one. And why do I have this new type? So the new type is useful when you have some like base type and you want to modify them, ask them to behave slightly different than the base type. For example, I just wrap around this in the most standard int type with my int, and maybe I want to make it have some other properties rather than int. And you'll see why what I mean by other properties. But yeah, it's basically the same thing. And you just want to add functionality to it so you don't interfere with a base data type. Okay, now type class, finally type class. So type class, it's a set of types that, or you can think of it as a set of types that share a common set of methods. And it's implemented differently for different types. For example, the EQ type class or equality type class has two functions, the equal to either equal or unequal, equality or inequality. And so with type class, you put types into the type class. And we call it like we declare some type as an instance of a type class. For example, int Boolean values and characters are instances of EQ type class. It's because you can see whether two integers equal to each other. You can see Booleans equal to each other and characters equal to each other. And so they belong to the EQ type class. And there are other things, so it's num type class, which has appeared earlier. That's the num A and the arrow A part. So that syntax means I want A to be in this type class. And num type class include operations like plus, minus, multiplications, absolute values. So usual things you will attach to a number. And the instances will be like int, double, float, and many other things. And the show class, basically it's just a print. If a data type is not a show class, then you don't get to print it in your GHCI. And you can find what operations a type class have and what instance the type class have by typing this into a GHCI. So just column info and your type class name. Okay. And each time when you declare a type first, and now most of the time your type, it's just, you have your type name, you have your constructors, but what exactly it behaves, like it's still completely abstract. You need to put them into type class so that you can you attach properties to it. And the way to do it is first you declare, you define your type, and then you declare it as an instance of a type class here, and then your data type name, where then you just you implement those functions that belongs to my class, the type class, and you define how they act on your data here. And example, if with our colors, our color is now, it's just colors, it has three constructors, and we can declare it as an instance of the EQ class by implementing for each of the constructor. Red equals to red, then it's true. Red equals to orange, then it's false. You just do each of them. And yeah, so that's how we do it. And there, there's some functionality in Haskell that if it's kind of standard derivation, so you can just see deriving equality. Like, there's some standard pattern that Haskell will define for you. So you don't have to always do the obvious. Okay. Any questions on type class? No. Okay. So finally, excuse me. Finally, I'll explain some important type classes in Haskell, and those are functors, applicatives, and the monad. Why did I say plural? A functor, applicative, and monad. I'm going to use figures from the last reference I gave at the beginning. And yeah, they're pretty cool. And I'll say functor and applicative, mathematically, I think the like both applicative and functor summed up together, and that corresponds to the mathematically defined functor. So if it helps you to understand them later on, then you can use your mathematic definitions for them. Monads, I personally find it hard to map to mathematics, so I'll explain it in a more computational context. Okay, so functor first. Yeah, by the way, I put some example code in this file. So functor, what a functor class is, it's defined this way. So for f to be in a functor class, then it has to have an fmap function. And fmap function so, takes an argument which is a function, a usual function from a to b. And it takes fa, which is a wrapped in f. It's like a context you wrapped in f, or and it returns the types b wrapped in f. And so here the pictures, those a, b's are like those numbers, and this f is like this box. And the number in the box, or the bare value in the naked value, but put in a box is this fa. And so what this f map does is, so this object is an fa. This a to b here, it's like plus 3. So it's you can think of an integer map to integer, it's just plus 3. And what it does is take this value out of the box and apply this function, get 5, and put it back in the box, which corresponds to the final fb. OK? And yeah, this is just an infix notation, so you don't like this bracket with dollar signs side is another way you write fmap function. Okay. And
is fmap in the Swift code, or do we have to write it?
So this is a class definitions. If later on, if you want to make something else as a functor class, and then you have to define fmap for that type.
I see.
Here is an example. Here, this is how the maybe type is an instance of the functor class. And it's the fmap needs to be defined for each of the constructors of maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so for maybe class, fmap is defined as fmap f will be some function with just this bare value. So here the bare value will be like the type A, like maybe A, that A is a bare value. And it's mapped to some values belongs to the maybe type. Here, so we do it case by case. This case is just S. And it returns is whatever this bare value is evaluated by applying F, and then put it back to this just context. And the second case is when we don't have just x, we don't have a value, we just have nothing, then we just map it to nothing. And this is how maybe it's defined as an instance of a functor class. And another example, list is also an instance of functor class. And the map function we saw earlier is a fmap function. So it's the same thing. Yeah. Any questions?
In this instance functor maybe thing, what is f exactly?
F is, if it's an abstract argument now, but it should correspond to this type. So here, this f, sorry for the notation, this f is completely not this f. F up here corresponds to maybe down here. Mm-hmm. So FA corresponds to maybe A, mm-hmm. Okay? And the constructors are just something belongs to A or nothing. And this F corresponds to this part. So that is a bare value, without the maybe, without the just. So it gets inside of just, and it applies to X, and finally put it back in the box.
So the where is the maybe in the two lines?
Well, you don't get maybe in these lines because maybe is a type. Type does not enter your function definition. It only enters your function type declaration. Just let me flash back to remind you of the syntax. Here, okay, maybe only gets here when you declare constraints for your type constraints for a function. And when you actually define how it acts on different things, only constructors, like the actual elements of your data type appears in your function.
So the functor is maybe or?
The functor is maybe, yeah. Okay, so that's functor, and applicative is very similar to, not very similar, it's an extension from functor. So here, the main idea is just in functor, you wrap around some values, and in applicative, you wrap the box wrap around the functions too. As you can see here, this F map wrapped around a function from A to B. And can be compared to fmap function. And that's what use the infix function. So, the infix notation like the fmap index notation. And what it does is it get the functions and the naked values out of the box, put them together, act them upon each other, and get the result and put them back in the box. Okay. Yeah, and applicative, and the first line here. So this means for any F that belongs to applicative, it has to be first in the functor class. That's because you have to first be able to, F has to be able to wrap naked values first and then wrapped around the function. Okay. Yeah, and pure just something that's it's just take a naked value and put it in the most basic context. Okay, that's a box, yeah.
Sorry, could you please show the previous slide once more?
Yeah.
So instance is some keyword and functor is also a keyword?
Instance is a keyword, functor, here you put your class. Here the class is a functor.
Okay.
It could be the EQ class and num class, but in general, you put the class first.
So we are trying to define the maybe here, right?
Yeah, you are giving maybe some properties.
Okay.
Yeah. When you
fmap is also defined somewhere else.
Fmap is defined here. So each type class have some standard functions. If you want a type to be in this type class, you need to define how those functions work for this type.
Mm-hmm.
Like colors, I want it to be an instance. Like you want it belongs to the EQ class, then I have to define how those equal, like compare, oh, not compare, how it like red equals to red, how colors compare with each other.
So sorry, these three lines are defining the maybe or are they defining F map?
What they are defining? Okay, so this language is, it's declaring maybe as an instance of the functor class.
Okay.
And in order to do that, you need to define how fmap, which belongs to this class,
mm-hmm.
act on maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ah, I see. So the just x belong to maybe.
Just, yeah, yeah.
Just x belongs to maybe, and this is saying how f acts on that element.
Yeah. Yeah, so fmap belongs to functor,
mm-hmm.
and the type is you need a function maps
mm-hmm.
bare values to bare values. You need something that wrapped in your functor,
mm-hmm.
and it returns something wrapped in the functor.
But this functor class will also have other things like fmap, or fmap is the only thing?
Fmap is the only thing.
Okay.
Because this is how functor class is defined. It, when you define it, you define every function that should this class have.
Also, that f under the instance in the previous, that f there is not the f that shows up in class functor f.
No.
Yeah,
that is
no.
a different f
yeah.
that shows up in class functor f is the a goes to b.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
So basically, like defining something as a functor is a promise that you're going to give an implementation of fmap.
Mm-hmm.
And that, where it says instance, is where you've given that implementation
mm-hmm.
for.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. Makes sense. Okay.
So, what is f in this context?
This f is any general functions
okay.
that correspond to this type. That's for here, it's just without the just.
Okay, so this instance, okay, so any function I define on maybe, we can do the fmap.
Yeah, because maybe it's already declared as, like standard function
yeah.
already declared maybe as an instance.
It's like you try to first divide by zero, like let's say you have two integers, you try to divide by zero, then you would get something in this nothing and just class, and then you try to, let's say, square it as a second step. So this f will be like the square, right?
Yeah.
Right, so the nothing will square to nothing, and the just 2 will square to just 4.
Yeah, exactly, yes.
This allows us to like extend something that only works on the bare values, like a pure function that only works on the bare values. We can extend it now to be anything that can contain it. Anything that contains it as a functor, we can use the same functionality.
And right, and the applicative works in very similar way. Just here you wrap around the function too, the bare function too. And again, maybe and the list are instances of applicative class. And here is how it's defined. So the first, pure is just to put in the simplest context that maybe has, that's just a just. And more important is this, how is this, what is it called? I think it's, this function is called apply. So how apply is defined, again, it has to be case by case. And the on the left-hand side of apply correspond to this. And the two cases are nothing or just the f. So okay, f and f, I'm sorry. But so this f down there is an a to b. And f the up there is a just here. And yeah, and so this line reads, if it's nothing as a function, and when you apply to whatever you got, you get a nothing. And in this picture, it basically means here you get nothing, it's like null. And then whatever you put on the other hand side, it should give you a null. And the different, the second case is when you have an actual function, a valid function, and it's wrapped in this box just. And if you map something, then it just take your fmap function, because f is this for maybe to be applicative, it has to be functor first. So you have the fmap function defined for maybe, and you just use this. Okay.
Sorry, so maybe is a both a functor and an applicative?
So for this line means for f to be applicative, it has to be a functor first.
Oh, okay.
And right, and here is an example of a list being an instance of applicative. So like here, the list square brackets is like those box. And on the left hand side, it's wrapping your different functions in this list box. And on the other hand side, you're wrapping some values like 1, 2, 3 in this box. Okay, and let's take a look of how it looks like. I think I did here. Yeah, so it just, okay, yeah. All right, so I got three simple functions wrapped in list and applied on three values wrapped in list. And what it does is just takes each one out and mapped to what comes next. Yeah. Okay, question? Okay. Okay, finally, monad. Okay, so monad has more functions here. I would think of monad as, compare it with computation. So the process of computation is that a computation returns something, and that's basically what this is. So you have a value, and you're wrapping it around this monad M, and that's like you're wrapping it around a computation context. So your whole computation is kind of a bubble now. And fail is, well, a computation can succeed, it can fail. So fail is it's a desirable functionality we want to associate with a computation. And this string is usually just an error message. So you get an error message, and now you put it in this computational context. And here, this symbol is called the binding operator. And what bind operator does is, so when we do computations, we do computation one and get some result, we might continue with computation two, and so on, so on, so on. And this bind operator is what it does. So it's like it takes something, some results wrapped in your, it's like a result of your last computation. And then you get that result out, and you fit it into another computation. So this, you can think of it as applying a new computation, and the result of it is another, like the new, like computation one, computation two. At the end of computation two, this is what you get. So and the last operator is more, very similar to the bind. It's just ignoring the last, ignoring the result from last computation. So an example here, or pictorial here, is a, so first, this 20 wrapped around in the box, you can think of it as this item. And this like time glass things is this part. So this time class, it takes a bare value and spit out a wrapped 10. And that's what this do. So this is a kind of a computation. It's retrieve the result from whatever you have from last time and push it through, and what comes out is a result wrapped in your computational context. And you can bind, this operator is called bind because you can like bind it one after another. You can keep doing this.
Isn't maybe another way to do this just M A arrow M B? Why is like it seems like you're taking in some boxed value and also getting out a boxed value. So what is the need for the middle thing?
What is the need for the...
Like the A arrow MB, it seems like you're going from MA to MB, right?
So it's like you have an input, it's an output. But in Haskell, you don't modify the state of a word easily. So you put all your computation in kind of a bubble. And this M is that bubble. So you get an input. Your output is not a bare value. So we want to do things safely. We want to put something in a box to keep everything safe. Mm-hmm. And that's so you can think of like this is what you came out from last computation. It's in a bubble. But now I'm applying it. I have another computation that takes a bare input. And that's why we want to retrieve last things and apply these functions. And whatever comes out is wrapped in a bubble again.
Yeah. I can maybe provide a concrete example. You actually provided your own example, which is this division operation. It's very easy to define division, except if you divide by zero, then you have to go, oops, that's not a number, okay, oopsie. One way to do this is you could wrap everything in a maybe, but that's also a pain because each step along the way, you need to stop and say, is this thing that I'm dividing actually a number or is it just a nothing? And that takes a lot of work and a lot of effort to do all these things. So it's much easier to just define if I have a real number, like an actual just number, and I can define a division that says, okay, if this is a zero, I'll return a nothing. And the point of this monad binding operation is that then you can apply that easily defined function to the full case where you now are dealing with possibly the inputs coming in are not this, not that, without you having to do the work for it. The computer does the work for you.
So I have a concrete example here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is actually what the picture represents. So it's defined on int, and this is a that time glass thing, so, A map to MB. So this int map to maybe int, and it have it's defined with the guards. Like when x is even, then we can divide everything is fine. But when x is not even, when it's odd, then well, it's an int class, so we don't get a float here, so it's a nothing. That's why we want to wrap it into a maybe int.
So in this context, my question was whether we could have defined half from maybe int to maybe int.
Sure, yes, but it won't be in the monad context.
You'll be doing
it would achieve the same functionality, right? So from maybe int to maybe int, we could say half of nothing equals nothing.
Yeah.
Half of just even equals just even over 2, and half of just odd also equals nothing.
Yeah, it's just it's in a different context. For monad, what we want is when I'm giving an input, what could be different outputs,
mm-hmm.
and I'm dealing it safely with like maybe int to maybe int. In that context, what I'm trying to do is I'm giving an input. I don't know what this input might be. It could be a nothing.
Yeah.
So there's an uncertainty of what input I get.
Mm-hmm.
But in the monad class context, we don't have that consideration here. It's purely dealing with what the different output can come out.
So you kind of assume that the input is going to be a good one, in some sense, good in the sense that...
Yeah, that's a purpose of monad class.
And
yeah.
The binding is taking care of all of the careful stuff that you wanted to worry about. That's fine.
Yeah, so if I load... Sorry again. Okay, maybe you can play with it later. Like you can type it in, or you can do this on your own computer. You can just keep apply, like the input will be just 20, and it's fit into the half functions, like keep doing it. And like three times later, then you get nothing. Like, yeah. And this is the list as a instance of the Monad class. The list is a little bit hard to look at in this format. I actually don't recommend you look at it in this format. But essentially, the bindings in list is a concatenations concat map here. So right, oh god. So okay, let's try to do this. So a binds operator will take MA. So MA will first correspond here. It's numbers wrapped in list context. And second argument is some function from the bare value A to MB. And that's what the next two lines are. So this is some function. This function is when you get an X, which belongs to this bare values. X is the bare values. And it maps to something else in this MB context, which means it's mapped to another list. Okay, so that's what it's here. And getting inside, there's a second binding operator. And what did I do? So, okay, so let's forget everything before. So let's just look at the second binding operator. The second binding operators get four or five wrapped in list, and it fits into a function that takes y, a bare value, and returns an x, y. So this is basically what it does, the whole thing. It's mapping x to a list, and this list is a list of tuples, and it's putting x as the first element, and the four and five, they are plugged into y here, and you get 4 and 5 here. I know it's horrible to look at, but the last step will be plugging 1, 2, 3 as x here. So x equals to 1, you get a list of tuples, and x equals to 2, you get another list of tuples, and go on. And finally, you calculate everything together. Yeah.
When you do instance monad for the list, you don't define what is.
So. Because this is rather trivial. This you can think of these functions as just ignoring the whatever the first result is. So sometimes I don't know how Haskell does it, but sometimes it doesn't require all definitions. Like equal class, equality class, you only define equality. You don't need to define inequality. You need to infer the inequality from equality.
You can do one or the other.
Yeah, true. Yeah. So for Monad class, I think we don't have to define it. The thing really matters just return and the bind. Okay. Easier notations to look at rather than binding everything in a long line. And that is called the do notation. You will run into do notations a lot in Hyperion. And so do notation put everything line by line this time. So what it does is basically get your naked value out of your box or your context. Like, just three is wrapped in the maybe context, and you just get three out and put it to x. And similar, this y is like you extract this string exclamation mark out and assign it to y. And finally, you put them together and return. Return put a value in the context. So return will wrap your bare value, your naked values with your context again. Okay, And so this is an easier notation, binding, this is easier to look at rather than the binding operations for the list. So cross, I meant by cross list. So it takes two lists, and the dual notations will, so it's extracting elements out from L1 assigned to X, and extracting elements from L2 and assigned to Y, and then you put them together in a tuple, and your return will put everything back into context again.
This dual notation makes it all look like normal programming again.
Yeah.
That's sort of the whole point. And I guess, like, in the context of the list, it's like you're looping over each element of the list. Like, you're doing two for loops that are nested right there.
Yeah.
That means.
But be reminded, like, this order exactly corresponds to this order. So if you switch, then the tuples will also switch. And back in the binding operations, that's switching these two functions. Right? You'll put 1, 2, 3 here and 4, 5 here. Okay. So I think that's the end of this introduction. Any questions? Yeah.
Can you just give an overview of why this is like more useful than other languages? It seems complicated, and I don't see
it. I would rather say it takes time to think in.
Uh-huh.
One most common feedback I heard from people is that it's easier to look at. By easier to look at, I don't mean your first time today you look at it, you find it easier to read. I meant you wrote a 1,000 line of code and leave it for 6 months and coming back, you still know what it's doing. And with C++, I have to say my personal experience, I miss things out because I forget those long loops, those variable, like reassign updatings, it can be confusing.
Is it faster?
Yes, and also because, you mean faster computationally?
Yeah.
Depends, I think.
It's not.
Yeah, I don't. In general, it's not as fast as C++.
Other than personal preference for like readability, when would I choose Haskell over C++?
Can I give an answer? What we're doing is a lot of very large computations that are happening asynchronously and are happening in parallel. And that is something that is painful to deal with in many languages. And the specific process of chaining together computations through the notion of a monad and an applicative makes it so that we have a monad called the cluster monad. And all you need to do is put a computation in the cluster monad, and it'll go off right in the cluster and come back. And the code knows exactly when and where this has happened, and you don't have any problems of things getting out of sync because it knows exactly what the program flow is, explicitly stated in this language. And this makes it really, really, really powerful for the day-to-day usage of what you do for a Bootstrap program. There's a lot of layers of things all the way from like putting in some parameters and assumptions all the way to literally these gigantic like polynomial matrix problems that are being thrown into like all these binaries. And by being able to abstract all of those away through the language of a monad, through the language of an applicative, means that the day-to-day work, you do not need to think about all of the complexity of it. You can just go into a very small corner of the code, change a few dials, and be very confident that you're not breaking everything somehow. And you can run everything from on a laptop all the way to like on gigantic clusters and be confident that you're not going to get really weird sort of like things going on. So that's my case.
Yeah. I would comment just with my personal experience. So when I code and after I compile my code, And if when I run it, I still see errors. It's usually because I made a math mistake, not a coding mistake.
Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so practices, it's a test question. You just type that stack GHC, making sure everything works, and you can call that function and ask for some yes and no questions. Yeah, and this function is included in the file called exercise.h. Yeah, shut up. Yeah, and this exercise, I just I refer to some of the tutorial PDFs, and it includes some good exercise, and you can practice with the data structures and the syntax, and you keep two windows. You edit the exercise.hs and save, and you just type reload in GHCI, and you can test your functions and how to write them. Okay, that's the end of it.